C6. Number 22A.
The subject of today is the logic of Christian Science. Why do I take up this subject? As far as I know, this subject has never been taken up by the Christian Science movement or by the various students in Christian Science. And why should I take it up? Perhaps I can just show you how it came into my thought. Mrs. Eddy is stating in her textbook that her statements are logical and that it rests on logic. The classical logic is dualistic. That's the very foundation of a classical logic, that it is dualistic. Whereas when we came to the chart and began to see that the whole chart was leading us up to the one value of the one being, which has no dualism and knows no dualism, one could see that there must be a difference between the classical logic that is dualistic and her way of reasoning, which is monistic, which only has one God, oneness of being, and therefore one mind. Therefore, the issue was, how can these two very opposite logics somehow reconcile themselves in the textbook? And it is at that point that one begins to think more about the logic that Mrs. Eddy uses in the textbook. And therefore, we began to investigate this question very thoroughly, and I have to give credit to Eva Maria von den Steinen in Berlin, that she has been a terrific help to me in investigating through all the whole writings of Mrs. Eddy, the question of logic. We have hundreds and thousands of references how Mrs. Eddy uses her logic, and out of those many, many references, not only taking up naturally the term logic, that there are only a few references to the term logic, but the way she uses logic, Mrs. Eddy uses logic, the way she reasons in the textbook, all that we did investigate in order really to see that Mrs. Eddy uses a completely different logic than we use in the Western world. Therefore, this is how the whole subject came up, and I would like to share with you the findings of this subject. I would like to share them again as a initial presentation of the subject, as a subject that can be further evolved, that does not want to be a final presentation of the logic, but I would somehow present the many, many aspects that has to be taken into consideration when we reason logically in Christian Science, and how that differentiates itself from the classical logic. So I'm going to present to you that whole subject under various captions, and I'm going always to tell you what caption you can write down for your notes, so that you have some kind of ordered reasoning and notes which perhaps make sense. Also, before I start, I must make a remark that perhaps is only understandable to one or two in this audience, that when I speak about logic, I do not mean mathematical logic, but I mean logic as a tool for thinking, as a tool for practice, for practical thinking. This is different because mathematical logic actually has nothing to do with the old classical Aristotelian logic. So I'm only talking about that logic which governs reasonable thinking in our present, in our everyday life. The first title is just introduction. Point one, introduction. In this introduction, I want to talk about three subjects: A, classical logic; B, trans-classical logic; C, logic of Christian Science. It's about these three subtitles that I'm going to talk right now. I take up first the classical logic and just introduce it. Later on I will explain that classical logic. I only want to introduce it so that you are aware of what is meant by the classical logic. Classical logic was introduced to the world by the Greek Aristoteles, or you call him Aristotle. And the characteristic of his logic is that it is a two-valued logic. A two-valued logic. There is apparently no definite way of determining today if the English rendering is two-value logic or two-valued logic. I see it both ways in the literature. So if ever I say two-value or two-valued logic or three-valued logic or four-valued logic or four-value logic, it's the same, no difference. So this classical logic of the Greek is a two-valued logic. What does it mean? That logic is based on dualistic human thinking. The way we think is dualistic, which means that we think always in opposites, like right and wrong, life and death, spirit and matter, subject, object, right, left, above, below, no, yes. You see, always we are thinking in those opposites. The moment we say left, we know it is the opposite of right. We cannot think just left. The moment we say left, we mean it's not right. The moment we say above, we mean not beneath. So can you see that the whole makeup of our thinking is dualistic? And this is the basis of classical logic. This classical logic is the logic that has molded the Western world. The whole Western world is thinking in this dualistic logic, no matter if this logic has ever been taught in the schools to everybody. The tone of education right from the beginning, even before you go to school, from your parents is dualistic. This is ingrained in the Western world. It is not ingrained and was in earlier times not ingrained in the Eastern world. So this dualistic classical logic is typical, the product of the Greek classical period. And it has taken over the Western world, and we think that way. Classical logic, therefore, stands in opposition to what? It stands in opposition to mystical logic, also called paradoxical logic. And I'm going to talk about mystical logic and paradoxical logic later on. I just say, so that you know, that this scientific logic, it is really the classical logic, is the logic of science, more or less, in comparison to the mystical or paradoxical logic of the East. Today, it is also in opposition to the trans-classical logic in the Western world. But this is very new. So I come to that B, trans-classical logic. And here again, I am only, as we are introducing the subject, just for the beginning, show you that there is a new logic in the Western world that begins to take over and begins to replace the classical logic. What this trans-classical logic is, we will discuss at length later on. Just for the moment, it's good to see that in this trans-classical logic, the Aristotelian logic is only a specific case now, whereas up to recently it was the general logic. So it has become only a specific case because over the last 50 years the West has witnessed a breakthrough of a new logic that transcends, so to say, the classical logic. That's why one calls it the trans-classical logic. It has nothing to do with the mystical logic. It is still classical because it has to do with scientific reasoning. How did these breakthroughs come? They came practically all at the same time, round about the 20th of this century. It came, interestingly enough, through one of the very pure sciences, namely through atom physics. Suddenly, atom physics, they found a new phenomena, namely that a thing is not always the thing it is, but that it is suddenly something else. That it has not an identity, that it has two identities. It is the principle of complementarity that was found, that suddenly matter could be energy, energy could be matter. A particle could be conceived of as a quantum, or it could be conceived of as a wave, something very different, so that the same thing had two identities. And so they could only solve it by a new logic, the logic, therefore, of complementarity. They had found the principle of uncertainty relations, whereas classical logic naturally is based on certainty, is deterministic in cause and effect. At the same time, about in psychology, they became aware of the Gestalt theory, and in the Gestalt theory you have to reason at least in four values, and as they have a four-valued logic. What that means, I will tell later on. Then, at that time, or a bit later, we had the principle of statistical probability with which the physicists and the atom physicists suddenly had to work. And the probability is naturally not an identity. It means that it is only probable but not really certain, and therefore has not that identity which is unchangeable. And so again, they had to use another logic. With cybernetics coming on, they could see that especially in cybernetics, you couldn't work anymore with the old classical logic, that it needed a cybernetic logic, and this is at least three-valued, and therefore again transcends the classical logic. Even in biology, especially with that book of Lorenz about the question of so-called evil, he published a book, The So-Called Evil, he begins to show that the two-valued logic can no more be applied to evolution, that evolution is one-valued, that evolution does not know the duality of good and evil. I'm not going to explain why, but it is a terrific new question that is coming up now, and that shows that evolution itself is not two-valued, that what we call evil is in evolution good, and that what we may call good may be in evolution evil. So that there is no definite line of demarcation between good and evil. So I only showed you, and then naturally in structuralism, the moment we had in the 50s, 60s, the idea of structuralism coming into the forefront, we had at once the sense of dimensions. And the moment we introduce dimensionalism, the two-valued logic is not big enough, not wide enough. It cannot be applied. So we will see as we go on why in structure we have to use completely different logic than in another subject. This transclassical logic is not talked about in the newspapers and on the radio and on television and among people and on the Tea Party. This is an insight that only concerns at the moment those top scientists in those specific fields of activity, and only they are really aware that the old classical logic has come to an end, that it is only a specific case, but that we must investigate a trans-classical logic. So I come to the logic in Christian Science. Actually, that is a false rendering. I should say the logic of Christian Science, because Christian Science has its own logic. And I think in this little term, the logic in Christian Science is a false rendering, actually, because it would mean that we take the classical logic and see it in Christian Science, and this is exactly not so, that the issue actually is that Mrs. Eddy has introduced a new logic, the logic of Christian Science, and so we actually should speak of the logic of Christian Science. So whenever I make the mistake in speaking, you will know that it should be the logic of Christian Science. And you can see before I start really telling you what this logic is, but you can see at once that Mrs. Eddy must have used a different kind of logic when she says that revelation and logic coincide. It means that revelation acts according to its own logic, and that it must coincide with logic, We have taken this wrongly. We have taken it as meaning that revelation from God does coincide with what? With the old classical dualistic logic. But what you want to say is that revelation coincides with the logic of Christian Science. And this logic naturally is a different one, and yet can see if we have to do with revelation, and revelation comes from the one God, that must be a one-valued logic and not a dualistic logic. So what Mrs. Eddy really tries to present in the textbook, and I explain that very slowly, so don't get disturbed if first I just throw things at you, that what she presents is a logic that can overcome the dualistic logic and present many kinds of logics. She presents a three-valued logic. She presents a four-valued logic. She presents a multi-valued logic. She presents a dimensional logic. She presents what she calls the infinite logic. And all that, in its deepest sense, then can be reduced to the one-valued logic. But according to the situation, she will use the one or the other logic. And this is naturally new again. So that according to the problem stated, she will deal with it with a different logic. And all that will then be integrated into the structural logic, and that is fundamentally a one-valued logic. What then is really the relationship of Mrs. Eddy's logic to the classical logic? It is actually that Mrs. Eddy overforms the classical logic. She doesn't do away completely and just says this is nonsense, but she starts out with the classical logic and shows how we can overform that dualistic logic. And so we can see that writing 100 years ago, she was actually anticipating at that time already the logic that may come more and more to the forefront during the next 50 years. So she was at least a century ahead of the general thought in the world. Mrs. Eddy's battle, as she says, was against the false system. And actually, a false system means that it is built on a false logic. Because system means that you have to reason logically, and so you can see that she does not battle against matter and body and disease. Her battle is against a false logic. So that we see that if we have a better insight into her logic, that all those questions which have been contemplated by us over the last, say, 7 years, can all be resolved into just one thing, into a right logic. So that actually with the logic we come, so to say, to the common denominator of everything what we have been contemplating as matrices, as structure, as chart, as cybernetics, and so on. This all can be reduced right to a new kind of logic. What then is the issue of today? The issue is that if a logician who is trained in the classical logic, and I would say everyone that has had some kind of good schooling, academic schooling, if he is trained in the classical logic and reads the textbook, that he must find the textbook illogical. He must find the textbook contradictory. He must find the textbook absurd. The logic of the Greek, the classical logic, must find the textbook to be illogical. This means that we should not be disturbed if the critics tell that Mrs. Eddy was the most illogical person and writer you can find. We should be very pleased, because she did not want to write in the classical logic. But because we were not aware that Mrs. Eddy was using another logic, we were defending her logic against this criticism, and we were defending it without even knowing what classical logic is. So we really were defending Mrs. Eddy on a very weak basis, because I think very few who sit right here now in the audience could tell me what the principles of classical logic are. Wouldn't you think so? So we were just, because we were loving Mrs. Eddy and her work and everything, we just felt, golly, we have to defend that woman because she says what she presents is logic. And we meant with logical, classical logical, instead of seeing that she had her own logic and said so. So any discussion with other people, with those trained in the classical logic, is really ending into nothing. It's arguing to and fro until one first finds oneself on the basis of what kind of logic the textbook is written. Any discussion and argumentation is just in vain. It must be in vain, because they go out from two different logics. The other question is, why hasn't the church or the Christian Scientists not seen this before? Well, they haven't seen it before because the time was not right. They have never really investigated that whole question of logic in the textbook, and therefore I don't think there exists any article or any booklet or any brochure on the logic of Christian Science.